Vanessa and Gallant continues on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, happy Thursday, everybody. Vanessa and Gallant coming to you. I'm in Indianapolis for the NFL Combine. Paul Gallant holding it down in studio. He's at Gallant Says on social media. I'm at Sports Vanessa. Please reach out, text the text line, and let us know your thoughts on all things H-Town sports as we continue coverage this week of what's been a pretty busy week. We know that that everything with Deshaun Watson, Paul, has taken maybe a little bit longer than we thought. Certainly longer than those close to him thought, because if you remember last year, everybody was saying everything would be wrapped up soon, and it is not wrapped up. So yesterday, as the NFL Combine press conferences and whatnot continue, multiple people, GMs, coaches, were asked about Deshaun Watson. Here's the thing at the Combine. There's the main press conferences, which are obviously taped, sent to the masses. And then a couple of the teams, including the Texans, which is really nice of them, do kind of off to the sides with the local media. Sometimes they'll allow cameras for those, sometimes they won't. So yesterday, Chris Greer, who's the Miami Dolphins general manager, did his like main press conference thing and then met up. And I explain that because we do not have audio of this comment, but it did happen in one of those off to the sides meetings where it was asked of Chris Greer, what's the deal? Do you guys like Tua? Are you going to go after Deshaun? And Chris Greer, according to a myriad of reporters, said, quote, the door is shut on Deshaun Watson.
I hope you did it very dramatically, like just slammed on the table. The door is shut on Deshaun. That would have been awesome if he did that. You know, he could grandstand a little bit, pat himself on the back. He's like, we're against 22 allegations of sexual misconduct. If it were 22, no, we are out. I feel like that's honestly where the Dolphins would be if this was not the situation that it had turned into. And also, as we touched on a little bit earlier, Vanessa, if there's no Brian Flores lawsuit, are the Dolphins a little more comfortable doing something like this? Because the Dolphins, they're under the spotlight right now. That is for damn sure. Honestly, if you really want to be skeezy, you would think that, oh, you trade for Deshaun Watson? Well, we're not racist anymore. Now we're just like every other NFL team. And we just take chances on guys who need a second chance, which a lot of people like to subscribe to. But Dolphins are out, officially. Giants are out, officially. And that's all we definitively know at this point, Vanessa.
Well, but do you believe that? And I will say this. I do believe the Dolphins. And I believe the Dolphins because kind of what you alluded to. They're not going to take all of this on. I don't think they're going. I mean, you have to remember, Stephen Ross is being investigated for tanking games.
Yeah.
Like, he actually may have to sell the team if that's the case, because that is such a serious thing in the NFL.
Which is funny because the Browns were doing it for years, but with the Dolphins right. It's actually an issue because there's a allegation of racial discrimination and that at the same time. Anyway, yes.
Yeah, I believe the Dolphins. Do you believe the Giants? Because the Giants were the other team that said this.
I believe the Giants. The Giants, I mean, the Giants are a bunch of goody two-shoes. And if you want to know who was the one spearheading the anti-taunting movement last year, it's 100% the Mara family. And these guys, like, they are country club, bougie, insufferable. We're above that. We do things the right way. Except for, you know, operating a football team, because you've technically been the worst football team in the NFL over the last, like, half decade. No big deal. But the Giants are very big into themselves. So I believe the Giants are out too. After that, that's where it starts to get a little bit tricky. The Broncos were basically like yesterday, George Patton, general manager of Vanessa, he said, we want to get a good quarterback. We want to have better play at that position. And he did not defend anybody along the way. But I've been getting a kick out of some of the responses that GMs have been getting. We heard, and we played, we'll play him maybe a little bit later on, with Scott Fitterer, the general manager of the Panthers, and Howie Roseman of the Eagles. And Tyler, if you could get this ready to go. Martin Mayhew, who said that they're open to upgrading the quarterback, but this is a really funny open to saying that the Washington Commanders are open to trading for a quarterback. Here's Mayhew.
Obviously, we're looking at all opportunities there in terms of quarterback. You know, first, I just want to say how much I appreciate Taylor Heinicke. You know, he had a battlefield promotion. Our starter played 16 snaps last season. He was our backup, played the entire season for us. He did yeoman's work, one of the hardest working guys that I've been around, one of the toughest competitors. So I just thank the world of Taylor and really appreciate him. But we are looking to upgrade that position, and we're looking at every angle that's possible. We're looking at, you know, trade possibilities, draft possibilities, free agents. We're looking at everybody. That is a big piece of the puzzle.
He said so many positive things there, Vanessa, about Taylor Heinicke. He got a battlefield promotion last year, which I've never heard of described as someone replacing another player because of injury. The other thing that he said, I guess the Commanders are really just going all in with the military references.
And, yes.
Then a little bit later, after talking about the battlefield promotion, yeoman's work. Oh, yeah, he's using all the big words. And then he says, but, yeah, we're trying to upgrade. I just got a kick out of that answer.
One of the reasons, too, that the Dolphins, I think, are able to not get away with, but like, the Dolphins are finally getting decent PR for the first time in weeks because of Mike McDaniel. He's funny. He's sarcastic. He'll say anything. And he is, of course, their head coach as of a few weeks ago. He was on Good Morning Football this morning. And Peter Schrager asked him, because they're live at the Combine, Peter Schrager asked him his thoughts on Tua. And this is something that I tuned into because I knew this interview was happening. And I wanted to hear how authentic he sounded when he talked about Tua because of Deshaun Watson and the rumors that he could go there. This is what Mike McDaniel had to say.
Hey, Mike. Tua's been the topic. And yesterday you praised Tua. And I know when you interviewed for this job, I'm sure Tua was first and foremost mentioned. Where are we at with Tua Tagovailoa as the future of the NFL's Miami Dolphins? And where are you as his head coach going into the situation?
Well, currently I'm right here. It was his 24th birthday yesterday. Oh,
happy birthday, Tua.
A little belated, but we're good. But at a great spot, honestly. Just because, you know, in brief interactions, just getting to know each other, I'm spending some time. You can tell that it's empowering to the player that there's people that believe in him. And, you know, myself, Frank Smith, the offensive coordinator, Derek Bovell, the quarterback coach, we've all been in communication to build that relationship and that trust because it's like a trust fall with a player. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I have these skills. It's a very important year in his career, very important year for all of us coaches. And we have to depend on each other, rely on each other. And I'm really excited moving forward because, you know, the guy has some skills that I think are untapped. I think it's important that you empower the quarterback with the rest of the players around him and the scheme that you bring forth. So I think his best days are in front of him, and that's a really cool piece of the process to be a part of.
So that's Mike McDaniel.
Yeah.
Mike. We can't help but continue to listen to you because we just want more juicy nuggets.
He's so intriguing and so funny.
He riveted us.
He really did.
But while boring us at the same time. It was amazing.
Here's the thing. So, I mean, look, when he says that him and, you know, the offensive coordinator, Frank Smith, love Tua and that they're – I don't doubt that they're excited to work with Tua. It's just that if you injected every coach and GM with truth serum and said, would you rather have Tua or Deshaun Watson based on the field skills only, I think we know what they would say.
Yeah, definitely. It's an awkward situation to put yourself in. And, you know, first off, you're being asked about a guy in another team in certain situations. And you're being asked about the guy that you just took the job and you're charged with fixing, which is funny because, I mean, how much fixing can a coach really do in the NFL, especially when it comes to a quarterback? Is Mike McDaniel suddenly going to make Tua Tagovailoa, who definitely had to deal with a lot of nonsense in Miami in terms of them trying to figure out who the hell their offensive coordinator was? That was Brian Flores' biggest failure. Is all of a sudden like the offensive coordinator going to make things better for Tua? It could happen. You know, if we saw what Arthur Smith and was able to get out of Ryan Tannehill. We saw what Kyle Shanahan, the level that he unlocked with Matt Ryan. But for the most part, that's not going to happen. For the most part, you will get slightly better play out of a quarterback with coaching. And I think the Dolphins are trying to convince themselves right now that Mike McDaniel, because he's been part of the cool kids club, you know, with Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan, that, oh, well, everything that they touch turns to gold, so everything that he touches will turn to gold as well. And that's probably not going to happen. And it'll probably be a mistake for the Dolphins long term.
I think he's intriguing, and I actually disagree. And I only say that because I think that he's worked his way up. He's almost 40 years old, if I'm not mistaken. He's had several stops, including a few years in Houston. So I do think that the whole, like, quote unquote, boy wonder thing is over. Like, I'm just over it. I don't need to hear that all of these, like, nerdy guys are going to be great coaches. Where I will make an exception with Mike McDaniel is that he's not that young. He looks young, but he's not that young. He started coaching early. And so I think it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do and what that quarterback situation is. I believe the Dolphins when they say that they are not interested in Deshaun anymore, as do you. But, of course, only time will tell. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant on a Thursday, we're talking AFC South, the quarterback situation, and other combine storylines and news. That's next.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Sports. ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
And it is a Thursday, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. I'm Vanessa Richardson. My co-host is Paul Gallant. He's at Gallant Says. I am at Sports Vanessa. Big week for the NFL as the combine continues. I'm here in Indianapolis, as is Lance Zierlein from our morning show. And, you know, one of the big storylines, Paul Gallant, is not only the quarterback situation with the AFC South team that we cover in the Houston Texans, but the quarterback situation really throughout the AFC South, primarily Carson Wentz. But there's also been talks about Trevor Lawrence. Is he going to live up to his potential? Where is Ryan Tannehill at and what is his ceiling? So I would actually argue to say that the quarterback scenarios as a whole are the most interesting in the AFC South out of all of the other divisions.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot up in the air. You know, is Davis Mills someone that will be the starter for the entirety of this coming season and show enough potential to be the starting quarterback the year afterwards? Are the Texans going to draft the guy too? So there's definitely a lot of questions here. I think that it's important to start off this conversation with the situation that is probably the most dire, and it's the one in Tennessee. You know, the Titans had the one seed, and their quarterback threw three interceptions in their home playoff game. So you can understand why John Robinson, the general manager of the Tennessee Titans, Vanessa, actually cried yesterday. He cried. Seriously, we're not kidding. Here is John Robinson crying.
The trust that...
What?
Ownership has put in me, our fans, and I mean, that stadium was rocking now. And you can only imagine what it would have been like the next week. So,
I love this.
Pretty long list of stuff that I got to be better at.
I feel like here, Vanessa, I don't know how many people out there watch South Park, but there's an episode where someone crosses Cartman, the short little fat kid, and Cartman responds by getting his parents killed and eating them in a chili afterwards, and then licking his tears as he cried about it at the end. And I kind of feel like Eric Cartman right now, where I'm just loving the tears that are coming out of the Titans organization. Because I know that they're stuck with Ryan Tannehill. It made me think about this really quickly. I don't know how many people have watched the movie Varsity Blues, Vanessa. The very end of the movie, this is what John Robinson is.
Billy Bob cried because he's a bit of a crier.
Like, Robinson's a crier. Now... Maybe those are authentic tears. Maybe those are hard-o tears. Do you think that those are real tears?
I think there's something else going on. Whether that's he thinks his job is on the line, whether that's he knows something about Tannehill, maybe not being right health-wise, I don't know. But he's not just crying at 11 a.m. in Indianapolis, Indiana at the NFL Combine. Like, there's something else going on. Marital issues with him and his wife. I, I don't know. Maybe right. he was out drinking the night before, and but there's something else.
You
other
would think
than
that would happen
like,
if you're out drinking though while you're drinking, you know? And I'll admit
right.
it, like
that's true.
I'm a very emotional person. I cried while watching the
oh,
movie.
Oh, we have to drink
day.
Together.
But you should. I cry during movies often. Now, when I'm out drinking from time to time, I'm told that I get pouty as well if I've had too many. Like, there's a certain line where I'm happy, 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 hyper, hyper, happy, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, help, my life sucks. I host a sports talk show. Why doesn't anyone like me? Like, I do get it. Like,
it's a very flattering impression of yourself.
No, it's pretty accurate. I mean, I know it happens all the time. Those are my two problems. I'm either too loud or, from time to time, a little too mopey with a little sauce. But that was weird. And I get why, though, Vanessa, to go back to the conversation we started off with. They have the worst situation right now because that is a really good team defensively, offensively, and the one thing holding it back is that Tannehill is not special. Is he bad? No. But he, especially without Arthur Smith, threw a lot more interceptions than he had in the 2 years before where it looked like it was the Tannehill renaissance. He is the clear obstacle that is going to keep Tennessee from being in the same conversation as the Kansas City Chiefs with Mahomes or the Buffalo Bills with Josh Allen. And now the Cincinnati Bengals with Joe Burrow.
Yeah, the AFC South, we're talking about the quarterbacks in the AFC South. Yeah, definitely interesting that he got so emotional yesterday.
Yeah.
The other team in the AFC South recently that we were talking about was the Indianapolis Colts. And here's the thing. We don't even at this point, I think, like, and I respect the reporters in Indianapolis because I know all of them when they say sources say Carson Wentz won't be back, etc. I don't really think we have to question that based on the media availabilities, not only Jim Irsay's videos, but the media availabilities of Frank Reich and Chris Ballard, because these are two guys that have always said Wentz is our quarterback. Wentz is our quarterback. We believe in Wentz. When Wentz had a bad game, Chris Ballard and Frank Reich were very quick to point out the good things that he had done, the win over Arizona as opposed to the loss in Jacksonville. So the changing of tone to me indicates everything that we need to know on whether or not Carson Wentz will be back. This is what Chris Ballard said yesterday about the situation with the Colts quarterback.
I don't know. We're still working through it. And I know I'm going to get a lot of questions about Carson right now. And I don't have a direct answer for you. We're working through it. Jim, Mr. Irsay, and Frank and I will sit down over the next 10 days and figure out where it's going. Ultimately, we'll do what's best for the team, for the Colts, both in the short term and in the long term. I'm not saying
okay.
we don't.
I'm going to make a continue, Vanessa.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I think that tells you everything you need to know about Carson Wentz's status, because remember, he's super close with Frank Reich. Frank Reich really stuck his neck out to bring him here, and Frank Reich said that verbatim. I stuck my neck out to bring him here. So in my opinion, he's gone, and so
probably.
There will be some movement there, I think.
I'd rather have Wentz than Tannehill, though. And I'm going to make a devil's advocate argument for Carson Wentz. And Vanessa, you saw a lot more of it, because I know you, in addition to watching, you know, the Texans, you've been watching the Colts.
Yeah.
Look at the wide receivers that he had last year that were not named Michael Pittman Jr., who was your only 1,000-yard receiver. T.Y. Hilton was banged up for a good portion of the year. He only played in 10 games. And T.Y. Hilton, we all know, is like a Texans murderer. He just kills them every single game. Like, he has, I think in 20 career games, he's got almost like 2,000 yards receiving against the Texans.
It's actually insane.
It's crazy. I mean, he's one of the most terrifying, like, random Houston destroyers that I think we've ever seen. Right. And it's not like he's a bad player. Like, T.Y. Hilton's a very good wide receiver. I don't know if I'm, you know, going to say Hall of Famer or anything like that, but very, very good wide receiver in his time. But, okay, after Michael Pittman Jr., Zach Pascal is their second leading receiver in terms of yards. And Jonathan Taylor, with 40 receptions, tied with Nyheim Hines, also with 40 receptions, those two guys are tied as your second leading receivers. Two running backs. So that could be a lot on Wentz, but I also just wonder about the supporting cast that's around Carson Wentz. Like, I think Michael Pittman Jr. is more of a number two wide receiver. I wonder if Indianapolis looks at themselves in the mirror and says, what's more likely, that we can get a quarterback in this year's draft or in free agency, or maybe we roll it for one more season with Wentz when it does seem like they're all out on him and try to get him another wide receiver to throw to? They clearly have an awesome running game with Jonathan Taylor, and I do like Nyheim Hines a lot as a, you know, gadget running back, but I do think Wentz could, or whoever's under center for Indianapolis, needs a little bit of help there.
I do, but I think they have a mostly complete team. They have a spectacular defense. You know, maybe they can trade and get something for him, because I do agree with you on this. I think Carson Wentz can play in the NFL. Like, he didn't have a great year and maybe live up to expectations, but I do think that he will belong in a system somewhere. Trevor Lawrence, it'll be interesting to see that potential to play out. I like him and Doug Peterson paired together. I think they're going to work well, and I think that him not having a coach that is getting grinded on in Ohio after a road loss will be a good thing for him.
Getting grinded on. I don't know why that made me laugh. Made me think about middle school dances. Those weren't allowed. It wasn't allowed. You weren't allowed to grind in middle school.
Not did you go to private school?
I did.
I went to public school, baby. We were grind on me. Relax your mind. Take your time on me. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So not even like the rap songs or anything like that. Because that's what I remember what we did. And it was so weird grinding. You know, especially so in high school, I remember there was somebody that was mad about the fact that I didn't like grind on her at a dance and became completely unattracted to me after this happened. Like, she told my best friend's little sister this. And
wait, but the girls grind on the... Sorry, go ahead. But girls grind on guys.
Well, the guys grind on the girls too, right? Isn't that the thing? For those who don't know, grinding is basically like when someone... Girls dancing in the front, guys dancing back, and then there's literal grindage going on between butts and crotch.
I never had the urge for a guy to grind on me.
I've never understood why it would be appealing for anybody. Yeah, it's weird. And
it
remember in college,
like, he dodged a bullet.
In college, at like a frat party, it would essentially be like a weird dry humping fest. And I remember just thinking to myself, you know, in retrospect, I'm so glad that like cell phone cameras didn't exist, because some things that take place on like a frat party, like dance floor, are pretty weird just to think about. Like, oh yeah, I did this in college. I was grinding on people while listening to rap music, and it was essentially like it's just very, very weird. It's just a weird visual. You're welcome for that visual, everybody.
Reliving the Newhouse, Syracuse Newhouse days.
Oh, no, none of those Newhouse nerds were doing that, no.
And the real question is, did you know the lyrics to any of the rap songs?
No,
that
it was
playing?
Like, rap, rap song, it's going on, what?
All right, what? Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we have some really, really, really exciting breaking news that I think is a game changer for all sports leagues and possibly the entire country. I'm not being dramatic. That's next.
Well, hello.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Contest.
Some very, very... Oh, go ahead, Paul.
I got to read a contest liner. Go. It's that time again, Vanessa.
You do it. Woo! Brr, brr, brr.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5's fourth annual Bracket Madness presented by Bud Light, supported by Rambler Sparkling Water. Guess what? We're giving prizes to all the winners. You could win a 65-inch 4K LG LED TV from Audiovisual Consultations, $50 gift cards to The Burger Joint. Ooh, Chewy's Fine Tex-Mex. Ah, Smash Burger, much more. ESPN975.com is how you register. It's Bracket Madness presented by Bud Light, America's favorite light lager. The floor is yours, Vanessa Richardson.
Did you say 65-inch? Hey-o.
Ah,
we are rolling along on a Thursday, and we have some very, very... very exciting breaking news. I think this is huge for all of sports. The NFL is officially back to normal. Tom Pelissero reported at first the NFL and NFLPA have agreed to suspend all aspects of the joint COVID-19 protocols effective immediately after nearly 2 years of restrictions and not a single game lost to the pandemic. It's back to normal. So basically, the long and the short of it is this: no more COVID protocols. Individual teams, if they want to, can still require masks in team facilities. That's on them. But the actual protocols from the NFL and NFLPA are no more. Paul, this is great news. I mean, this is awesome, awesome news.
The NFL screws up a lot of things, but I really think that they deserve a lot of credit for the way that they handled COVID-19 the entire way through. No games missed outside of preseason games. You had two complete seasons where, yeah, you had the weird year 2020 where you're trying to figure out what's going on with the science and you have games that are taking place on Monday and on Tuesday. And of course, at the end of last year, we had a bit of a panic over the new different variants. I'll give the NFL a lot of credit. They didn't let it completely change the way that they were going to go about doing things. I think some people thought that might be a little bit callous, heartless, whatever. Because it was weird down the stretch of the season, Vanessa, that there were guys that were missing games because of, you know, testing positive for COVID. Entire teams were missing several guys before the playoffs. But then the playoffs start and no one tested positive for COVID. But honestly, I mean, if they felt comfortable, these players felt comfortable in the same locker room as guys who maybe potentially had it, who didn't have the vaccination or something like that, and were willing to show up to work every single day, maybe because they feel like they had to. I understand it's like there are some negative thoughts that come out of it, but I think the NFL deserves credit for the way that they've handled this the whole way through. And yet we're at the finish line now. And this is the league where it's, I think, been the least amount of change from what you expect from a normalcy perspective over these last couple of years.
It wasn't perfect, kind of like you alluded to. There were times where it was like, okay, there's no way that you can have this game and play this game and expect this team. Like, remember when the Browns, like half of Cleveland's roster had COVID? It wasn't perfect, but they made it work. And here's the thing. Media members in general, I don't care if it's radio, TV, writers especially, need access. And it has been hard to make it work over Zoom.
I feel for you on that front because I don't think the NFL is ever going to go back to allowing people in the locker room because it's awkward.
Yeah, it is awkward. We'll see. But especially, I mean, the people that really need that access are the writers because they will take one comment, one quote, and go with it and do a nugget on an entire story.
Yeah, you can't get off the record guys anymore.
Right. I hope that that returns.
I do too, actually.
I hope that it returns because the access is necessary. I don't know that it will, but this is a really important day. And the fact that the NFL is like full-fledged, let's go with it. And they based it, look, people can be skeptical about it. Everybody's allowed to have an opinion. They based this on science and on the CDC. So it's time and it's really exciting.
Right. And a lot of people were basing things on the CDC, which is changing things a lot. So yeah, I'm happy that this is official. It is something that I almost felt was implied. And, you know, as someone who's lived in an area where they took things very seriously compared to here, where it's a lot of, hey, you're responsible for your own actions, take it or, you know, don't go out. I'm happy that the rest of the, this is a sign that things are getting back to normal finally. And I know like the new normal and all those things like that.
One more caveat. You said individual teams can do whatever as well, but it's also still, they're also still kind of beholden to state and local laws.
Yeah.
So like
New York,
like a New York team or something like that, like they may still have to mask up.
Hey, we play in Jersey.
Vaccinations, stuff like that.
I totally get where you're coming from. So that will probably be an obstacle. But you would think by the start of next season that a lot of those are going to be gone. I could be wrong on that, but I feel like this fall is going to be a normal fall, and I also hope that this is going to be a normal summer. Hot boy summer. Hashtag.
Hot boy summer. Are you going to have a hot boy summer?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I haven't had a summer in 2 years. There's no summer in Seattle. It's too cold. There's no pools. So, this year is going to be different. My pasty bod's going to be out.
That's a great point by our producer, Tyler, talking about how it could, state by state vary. But this is just a really exciting day. Here's where I think it actually ties into, like, the entire country. The NFL is the most powerful sports league in America. I mean, it's not even close. An average NFL game on a random Saturday, 2 o'clock or noon game will have 17 million viewers, and a World Series game has 11 million.
People watch the bleeping Pro Bowl more than they watch the NBA playoffs. Just think about that.
It's crazy. So I do think this is indicative that we are going in a direction as a country because look, billionaires beget billionaires and are friends with billionaires. So these guys in the NFL are friends with the lawmakers, are friends with the decision makers.
Good point.
So I think it's a good sign. Here's where I think it actually kind of impacts baseball. If the NFL goes full normal like balls to the wall. We are back, full stadiums, all of that. And baseball like can't manage to put together a full season. Am I overthinking it, or do you think that's like not a good look for baseball?
Oh, everything's a bad look for baseball. But yeah, when the NFL, the NFL is pantsing them, and the NBA potentially pantsing them too, then yeah. Look, they can't help but lose. They're just losers, baseball. I think that the people in charge, the commissioner, the owners, L-O-S-E-R, they do not know how to win. They do not know how to create minor victories for themselves. It has just been a series of, hey, we're tone deaf and we don't know how to promote ourselves. Not good, considering this was once the most popular sport that there was.
NFL suspending all COVID protocols, no more required masks. And this is, of course, for the league and the NFLPA's joint COVID-19 protocols. They are gone. We'll see how that impacts the rest of the league. Adam Schefter just tweeted, Pittsburgh quarterback Kenny Pickett's hands measured 8.5 inches.
Oh, you know what that means. Small hands, can't draft him. That's what I was going
to say. Joe Burrow tweeted, had that tweet that's since gone viral, because remember, Joe Burrow had small hands, and that was like a thing when he was at the Combine 2 years ago, and he tweeted 2 years ago, guess I need to retire because of my
small
hands.
Couldn't win the Super Bowl. Taken. Vanessa, I mean, if he had bigger hands, would he have won the Super Bowl? Joe Burrow, bust. Confirmed. You know? Super Bowl loser, Joe Burrow, with his tiny little hands. I'm curious if there's somebody out there who's like a... This time of year is funny, because I know Lance does a whole lot of work when it comes to, you know, scouting all these prospects.
Yeah, prospects.
There are some guys who, you know, don't do any work. And there are other guys who will stay married to their opinion on a prospect, like even years down the road. And I remember Mel Kiper Jr. was just beholden to the idea that Jimmy Clausen was going to be a good quarterback. Like, it still might be. And I want to know if there's somebody out there who said, like, yeah, Joe Burrow, he's tiny little biatch hands. This guy, he's terrible. Like, I wonder if there's somebody still like, yeah, I mean, you saw it in the Super Bowl. I mean, what did he do there?
Probably. There are a lot of talking heads, but it's good that people like you can say, like, you admitted you didn't think that Josh Allen would be good.
No, I thought he was going to be awful. He's improved a lot over the last couple of years.
And like, on a different level, I remember when Tony Romo was going into announcing, and I was like, yeah, I think he'll be fine. He seems like he has a decent personality. And then he just like exploded.
Yeah. Although I think the shelf life for Romo, I think it has expired. I mean,
hot take, Pauly G.
Well, you just made a Romo noise there. Ooh, oh, you know, he just makes like a bunch of noises that could be interpreted as sexual if you want. And I feel like now he's just wrong about a lot of stuff. And you complete that with, you know, Jim Nance, where everything's going over his head when Romo actually makes a funny. Yeah, I don't know. That's just me.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to put a bow on a Thursday. Stick with us.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're locked in with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, it is a Thursday. Thanks for hanging out with me and Pauly G. We are about to put a bow on it, but you might have seen this on Twitter. This is, when I saw this, it was like I couldn't believe that it was real.
This is one of those things that reminds me of Michael Scott on The Office, Vanessa, where you have to like...
It's a great point.
So back in the day where you couldn't just binge watch this stuff, like I would actually change the channel when The Office was on live because I could not handle how much Michael Scott made me uncomfortable. It was a great show and I tuned back into it, but I'd go away for like 10 seconds. I still do this with certain shows where I have to pause it and walk away. I'm like, oh my God, I can't handle what's about to happen. This is too much for me because it's not even real. But this made me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, this was bad. Why don't you explain kind of how it went down? So this is Wheel of Fortune, obviously.
Right. I don't
Legendary know. Game show.
Do you watch any game shows, by the way? I used to watch Who Wants to Be a Millionaire religiously.
I loved that, and I loved American Idol. American Idol, I guess.
It's kind of a game show. Kind of.
But I loved American Idol back in the day.
Okay. The one that I know a lot of people watched growing up is The Price is Right. Some people watch Family Feud. I watched that entirely for Steve Harvey reactions in it. And Wheel of Fortune is a show where, you know, unlike Jeopardy, I feel like everyone feels like you can do a pretty good job on it. You don't have to be a giant nerd to win like you do on Jeopardy. But sometimes you see things happen and you're just like, how the hell did this happen? So there's this poor lady who has up on the board in front of her a phrase, and there's only a couple of letters that she needs.
It says, there's like three or four letters at most.
Right. It says another feather, and then there's no, it's probably either in or on, your, there was only one letter missing from your, and then there's something with an A in the, is a three-letter word with A in the middle at the end. So this girl has the golden opportunity to take it home. Oh boy, she bungled the hell out of this one.
I'll solve.
Okay.
Another feather in your hat. I'll solve.
Okay.
Another feather in your lap.
No. Although the feather is moving around. Well, Thomas, I think the wheel got... Laura, you have another opportunity here. You can spin the wheel. You can try to solve the puzzle. What do you want to do? Go ahead and spin if you don't know.
I'm going
to
go ahead and spin.
Get buzzed out here.
That's so bad.
She spun. She said it almost first time.
Well, what letter would you like?
A P?
Yes, there's a P.
Right there.
Okay.
Right there. Spin or solve.
I will solve.
Okay.
Another feather in your map?
Oh,
no.
My God. And the worst is that the other people that are going with her, they also just got the worst roles ever, where they were getting bankrupt or skip turn. So they're just sitting there probably too, like wanting to pull their hair out as this just continued to be butchered over and over by Laura. So Vanessa, Pat Sajak like went on the defense last night for her. I'm sorry. You should know feather in your cap. That is a commonly said saying. Feather in your hat was close. Feather in your lap? That sounds sexual.
Why would you have a feather in your map?
Great question.
Why would you have a map with a feather in it?
You're on a boat and you're a pirate and you're looking at your map and like a seagull like drops a feather on it. Like that's literally it. I have no idea how you got the map.
Pat Sajak was so defensive about this. And I understand his whole like, you know, he doesn't want the people to be, embarrassed. But it was just this like really, really long Twitter thread about how like mean people were about all of these things and how you have no idea what it's like to be on a game show. I'm paraphrasing here, guys, but you have no idea what it's like to be on a game show in front of all of America and get a word wrong and your world is spinning and you feel so much pressure. Right, Pat, but that's what they sign up for. And nobody was like, people on the internet are mean, right?
Definitely.
But, like, most people weren't bullying them too hard. They were just saying that was moronic.
Oh, right. They weren't finding their Instagram accounts and, like, saying, like, threatening to murder them. You know? Like, and by the way, like, I've dealt with that before. That's not fun. It's a little traumatizing. But in this
you've dealt with what before?
Oh, during my little chill dog saga, a bunch of people threatened to murder me, rape me. That was weird.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
Bad.
I know. It was like, okay, this is very aggressive. Very, very aggressive. Whatever the case, this situation, people are making fun of her. Guess what? People do that. Honestly, I would rather have Steve Harvey there because Steve Harvey would have stuffed her in a locker to make fun of her.
Roasted.
We all think we would be good on these game shows. And you know what, Pat? You're right. A lot of us, we go up there, we're going to choke, you know, all of our mom's spaghetti all over our sweater already. But in this situation, you know, like, that was painful. Everyone deserves to make fun of her. It stinks that she's now going to get made fun of this probably for the rest of her life. But it's a fun pot. Once she gets over that, it's a fun, you know, conversation starter. Like, hey, I once biffed all over Wheel of Fortune. That was fun.
She should do media appearances and really make a buck out of it. We're committed not to talking about war or the politics, but I'll make an exception when it ties in with NASCAR. NASCAR Hall of Fame owner Richard Childress is offering to donate 1 million rounds of ammunition to the Ukrainian armed forces to help in the ongoing war with Russia. He said, quote, I was listening the other day to the Ukrainian president say he didn't want out. He wanted ammunition. I called my good friend who's the chairman of Ammo Inc. And I said, Fred, we have to help these people. They need ammunition. They stepped right up. Richard Childress, of course.
That's awesome.
Owns the car that Dale Earnhardt Sr. drove, and his grandson is Austin Dillon. So he's an absolute legend in the NASCAR world.
I'm glad people are actually doing things about this situation, because I think just about everyone's in agreement that Russia invading Ukraine is bad. So
right.
We don't really need to get political on this.
No.
I'm glad that somebody is actually doing something, though, as opposed to saying like, oh, yeah, Vladimir Putin, well, you're no longer the world's assistant judo master judge. Hey, Vladimir Putin, you know that black belt you have? Not anymore.
Right.
Wuss. You know, like, they're taking away random titles from him and from Russia. Hey, Russia, you can't compete in the World Cup as Russia. Now you have to go as Russian Federation. Although now they actually have been kicked out of, I guess, the World Cup or something like that. FIFA's
leave it up to them. Richard Childress, a NASCAR legend, to donate a million rounds of ammunition.
Do something. America. Don't grandstand. America. America. Bleep, yeah. Saving the day against the mother bleeping Russians. Terror. Russians, your game is through. Now you have to answer this to from America.
This from the text line. Had a teacher who was on Jeopardy, and he lost at the very end because he didn't bet $100 more than his competitor.
Oh, that sucks.
He shows the episode every year. 20-plus years later, he still hasn't gotten over it. That's brutal.
Well, how could you get over it? If it's just $100, you didn't bet that much, and you got the last question right, too. Oh, that sucks. Yeah, I wouldn't let that go either. Be drinking every night.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do that anyway, so you'd be drinking even more every night.
My mom's listening. Don't say that.
Oh, I'm just kidding, Mom.
Allegedly.
All right. That's a Thursday. The Killer Bees, Jeremy Branham, and Joel Blank are next. Thanks for hanging with us. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.